You're listening to Asheville FM at WSFM LP 103.3 Asheville. This is News Team correspondent Gary Leonard, and I am joined in the studio with Greg Borum, who is the Director of Advocacy of Children First Communities in Schools. Greg, as always, thank you so much for joining us.
As always, it's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and so it's actually been a little bit of time since you and I last spoke. I believe it was back in April. And since then, much has happened, and we are back from our July 4th recess.
Yes.
And we're about to dive into it here. So for the listeners out there, for a little bit of context, Greg Borum and I, we get together on a monthly basis to kind of speak to various advocacy things that are happening around the local level, state level, and federal level. And Children and First Communities and Schools, you all do such phenomenal work, and specifically around your very robust advocacy agenda, also known as a success equation. So for the listeners, can you talk a little bit more about your organization and what you do on an advocacy level?
Yes, sure. Children First Communities and Schools has been around in Buncombe County since the 1970s, and it's always had, as part of its work, doing public policy advocacy as well as direct services. And we know that direct services can meet immediate needs, but advocacy can change just the whole context and impact more people. And so our policy agenda that we do under the umbrella of the Success Equation mm-hmm. brings a lot of great organizations in this community and individuals and faith groups and now even some pediatricians together to work on an agenda that addresses things like early childhood, affordable housing, family supports, health care. And we look at those issues locally. We look at it on the state level, and we also connect the dots to the federal level.
So let's start there in that latter aspect. Unless you've been under a rock for the last month or so, you may have missed out on what's happening on the federal level with this healthcare bill. And interesting enough, I think, Greg, the last time we spoke, things were kind of moving around in the House. And most recently, there's been some movement on this healthcare bill in the Senate. Let's talk about without getting too much into the weeds in terms of what is this monster of a healthcare bill, but let's talk about how it impacts us, maybe specific around Medicaid and some of the cuts to that.
Sure. That's the part of the bill that we're following the most closely at Children First Communities and Schools. Medicaid is often misunderstood. I think a lot of folks just think of it as equal to health insurance for folks with lower incomes.
Right.
In fact, Medicaid is primarily, especially in North Carolina, since we did not expand Medicaid to cover more adults, Medicaid in North Carolina is still kind of the old school version. It's primarily an insurance program for low-income children and a lot of elderly folks, especially those who are in nursing homes, are on Medicaid. But over about half of North Carolina's children are insured thanks to Medicaid and or the North Carolina Health Choice Program. So we're talking about a lot of kids in North Carolina relying on this program for their health insurance and access to doctors and early childhood screenings and diagnostics and mental health services and dentists, all that good stuff thanks to Medicaid in North Carolina. So anything that would cut funding to Medicaid would really fall heavily on our children in this state. And the Senate bill follows suit from what was being introduced in the House and really could do some deep damage to Medicaid. And that would really, again, undermine the gains we've made with children's health in North Carolina. I think when we talked in April, we were looking at the great news that in North Carolina, only 4% of children now are uninsured. That's a huge... I mean, that's something to celebrate,
absolutely.
But if this were to go through at the federal level, that would really roll back that success.
In terms of folks who want to advocate and get involved and call their legislators, you can certainly go online. I imagine Children First, you have contacts for both Senator Burr and Tillis if folks wanted to advocate, because there was no vote before the July 4th recess, but who knows what will happen now.
Right, and that's the big question. Who knows? There was a real push to try to make this happen before July 4th, and then when the office that does the kind of nonpartisan survey of what the numbers would be came out that I think it was at 22 million more adults uninsured.
Yeah, I think it's like 28 million or something.
I don't have the numbers in front of me, but massive amount of folks losing their health insurance with this. That really gave everyone pause and they couldn't do what they needed to get that vote. And so this is a great time. They're in recess, so don't hesitate to call the offices of Senator Burr and Senator Tillis and really push them on this, especially anything that would hurt children's health insurance.
Well, in terms of public policy, it's not always in the deficit. There are actually various wins and things that we can celebrate. And most recently, our very own North Carolina General Assembly, there's been this big movement over the last handful of years and a movement and initiative that Children First Community in Schools was heavily involved with the Raise the Age. And Raise the Age is essentially 16 and 17-year-olds being tried as adults. And most recently, New York was able to pass that. And North Carolina came around. Do you want to speak to that a little bit, Greg?
I would love to. This issue has been on my desk for about a decade. We've been working with...
a decade, you say?
Yeah, 10 years. We've been working with great partners across the state, including North Carolina Child, NC Child, and even the ACLU of North Carolina had a lot of involvement. But as we've mentioned earlier on the show, it was a great bipartisan effort this year. A lot of kudos are deserved by Representative Chuck McGrady down in Henderson County for picking up the mantle and helping get this across the finish line. As you say, we did come in a few months after New York passed their bill. But starting in December of 2019, youth, 16 and 17-year-old youth who are charged with a misdemeanor or an H or I felony will be tried in juvenile court. And this is just great news in North Carolina. This is really something to celebrate out of this legislative session. And all the advocates across the state who have been working on this, whether for years or if they got involved this year, thanks for your efforts. It really paid off.
And again, we won't harp too heavily on the fact that we were the last state to do this, but I don't think it can be underscored enough how big of a deal this is in terms of what is mass incarceration, what is systemic racism, and the impacts of many low-income black and brown youth, 16 and 17-year-olds, who end up in this really insidious systemic system that takes place in terms of being incarcerated and being tried as an adult very early in their age and given further opportunities to kind of navigate around that. So this is a big win for North Carolina.
Yeah, indeed. And, you know, the barrier that having a criminal record places on you, you know, to not even be of age to have graduated high school yet and to potentially have a criminal record.
It's crippling.
It is. And, you know, especially in terms of mobility, too, when you look at youth from just our neighboring states who could have done the same thing in their state, like, you know, steal a bag of chips, for example, in South Carolina and not have a criminal record. You know, if they're applying for jobs or housing, if they moved to North Carolina, their record looks good. But our youth, wherever they go, that haunts them. And as you say, it disproportionately impacted youth of color. And so this is a huge and important step, and we want to monitor how it goes, and we want to make sure that our juvenile systems have the resources that they need to do the kind of evidence-based interventions that can make this successful. So we've got still work to do in terms of, you know, watching it, making sure it's funded at the right levels.
Absolutely.
But this is a watershed moment.
Absolutely. And I think I just want to quickly kind of touch on this because the advocacy work on the public policy level is so massive, but I think there can be this really harmonious marriage to some of the grassroots efforts that do take place kind of in conjunction with a lot of these efforts. And something that comes up for me is the Ban the Box initiative, where essentially employers no longer have that box on the front of applications that you have to check if you have ever been charged, convicted of a felony before. And that's a big one if you really think about it, because of everything that we have spoken about in terms of young juveniles, you know, being charged or adults being charged of a crime, how much of a deterrent that is in terms of finding meaningful employment. And so, again, I think it's so important for our elected officials to kind of take note of this. But I really want to kind of just like give a nod to some of the grassroots efforts that also happen within this work as well.
Yeah, definitely. And as you say, I mean, those efforts are so important because, you know, we're you know, 100 years of not of trying 16 and 17 year olds in the adult system means that there's a lot of folks in North Carolina who might have gotten that charge as a youth, and you know this policy doesn't go into effect till 2019, and so those grassroots efforts like Ban the Box and other efforts, policy efforts too, around record expungement and making that affordable.
Absolutely.
And really being able to give kind of now folks a chance who, you know, who didn't have the right age at the right time in North Carolina, that they don't have those permanent barriers to housing, to employment, to further education.
Absolutely. So let's stick within the North Carolina General Assembly, Greg. And now that it's finished, there are a couple things of note. Do you want to share a little bit about that?
Yeah, there's a couple of things that we were following with the success equation. As I mentioned earlier, we are very interested in issues around early childhood. Mm-hmm. We know that that's such an important time. That's where young brains are being formed and setting the stage for future success. So we care a lot about what kind of investments our state is making to make sure that young kids are getting access to services, to things that will early education opportunities and care. And so there is a little good news in this budget, some things to celebrate, which we need right now.
Yeah.
The first thing I want to call out is that the budget that was passed is going to provide access to the North Carolina pre-K program to about another 3,500 kids.
Wow.
That will impact a big chunk of the kids who are on the waiting list across the state for mm-hmm. that program. That's a premier program in North Carolina. A lot of other states have looked to North Carolina in kind of our leadership in mm-hmm. this field, and so that's kind of a model program. But over the years, we've kind of reduced our investment in it. So fewer children were able to get in. And so it looks like the legislature is kind of coming back around to it. And so that's a big win.
What's that number percentage-wise in terms of those who are on the waiting list?
Yeah, what I heard, and you should fact-check me, is that I think we'll be able to provide about 75% of the kids who are on the waiting list mm-hmm. access. I think when they went to compromise budget, I think the House had proposed taking, you know, enough funds for 100% of the kids mm-hmm. off the waiting list, but in the final negotiations, it got dropped back down to, I think, about 75%.
So still a positive.
Significant, very significant. The second thing, too, is a little more in the weeds, but if you're a listener who has currently a child care voucher or has utilized that program in the past, you know what an important program that is.
Absolutely.
To give access to early childhood quality care. But in Buncombe County, we get less money than other counties do for that service, so it makes the economics of providing care for our providers really tough. And as a result, some providers haven't been able to keep their doors open. In this budget, we're going to get a bump in Buncombe, as well as Henderson and Haywood counties mm-hmm. are going to get an increase for 0 to 2-year-olds in that voucher program. And that's good news for parents of young kids as well as providers.
And that comes into effect immediately, correct?
That, I think, will hit in, like, October, if I'm not mistaken.
And in terms, like, for the listeners out there who are hearing the positive, significant news coming from our North Carolina General Assembly, what does that lobbying look like? Like, how differently could this budget have taken shape in terms of the amount of kids that were suddenly going to be without, families going to be without childcare vouchers, et cetera?
Yeah, it's an interesting time in state politics, and I think that this budget was vetoed by Governor Cooper mm-hmm. and then overridden by the legislature. And so the budget is where Raise the Age and these early childhood investments happen. So mm-hmm. those are two great things to celebrate, but there's a lot in the budget that is also troubling, like another $500 million tax cut.
Yep.
I mean, that's $500 million that we could have been plowing into, you know, schools, early education, our juvenile justice system, all that. So the budget is such a mixed bag, and it's really, as an advocate, let's stay focused on early childhood. There's some champions in the legislature around this issue. And so working closely with them and out west, we had good folks with Representative Dobson and Representative McGrady. The Buncombe delegation is strong on these issues, but when they go to the final negotiations, it's the party in power that's around the table. And so, that's where, it becomes this kind of, wheeling and dealing kind of moment.
This partisan back
and
forth.
And so it's been a lot of advocacy, I think, with and leadership by Dobson and McGrady on these early childhood issues that then helps to set the stage so that these issues are making it into those final discussions.
Mm-hmm.
And, they're sticking. And that's good. And that's knowing how to line that up early in the session is good and just continuing to build relationships with those legislators, as well as our Buncombe delegation, just kind of reinforces that early childhood is an important value that North Carolinians care about. And I think that message is really taking hold, even in the context of some other kind of trends in our government that maybe aren't as favorable to some of our issues we work on.
There was also news regarding the SNAP food stamp eligibility as well.
Thanks for bringing that up. Yeah, a lot of folks took action and were really alarmed by the proposal in the Senate budget in North Carolina, North Carolina Senate, that would have taken about 133,000 folks off of SNAP, also known as food stamps eligibility in the state. Mm-hmm. That would have impacted about 51,000 children across the state. Fortunately, in the final budget negotiations, that was not put in there, so that is not happening. Mm-hmm. And again, I think a lot of that credit can be given to folks who spoke, you know, when that news broke, a lot of action alerts were out there. A lot of people called, wrote, and took action. And I think in the final negotiations, our legislators listened.
So my next question, and this may get us a bit into the weeds, but it's one that I think I have a hard time understanding around, is how so much of this, Greg, is quite frankly really inaccessible for people, and inaccessible for people whose families are directly impacted by this. So as listeners for the Asheville FM NewsHour are listening to this and like, oh yeah, there's a lot happening in our North Carolina General Assembly that are affecting me and my family and my children, how can they learn more about this? How can they understand the decision makers and some of these champions who are really, you know, fighting for early childhood and really fighting for our children, and to understand where they can get involved, where their phone call can go, and how to be able to understand like who makes these decisions? Because sometimes I just feel like it can be so heady and so nebulous that it's really hard for people who are listening to this and like, wow, these are awesome wins. I actually didn't know that, right? Until like they get mail in at their house saying like, this is what this looks like. So how can they see ahead of time in terms of being able to advocate for our state and being able to advocate for our children and their own families?
Yeah, that's the question that I wish I had the succinct answer to.
And there's not a silver bullet to this.
I feel like The policy disconnect is something that we need to do a better job as organizations and individuals in helping to kind of pull back that, in like what we were talking a little Harry Potter earlier, I'd say kind of the invisibility cloak of public policy. So so many people kind of don't even realize that you know, where these decisions are made, or even that like policy, like what level of government makes them. And it's just like you everything from like who paves my street to where do my food stamps come from, kind of thing. It's just like there's like this invisibility cloak for so much of that. It's like it just happens.
The Ministry of Magic.
I'm not sure where it comes from, right? And so I think one step is organizations need to do a better job of helping explain that. And we try. I don't think we're there yet, but we try to do that through our Success Equation network. So via our email list, our Facebook page, and our Twitter posts, we try to let people know when those decisions are happening. But there's a difference between, you know, the decision point, which is often, you know, kind of the, oh my gosh, all hands on deck, this is it, to the kind of long term. So we were talking to raise the age earlier. You know, our organization has been around that coalition table for 10 years.
Yeah.
We've learned a lot. Like, I feel like I know more than I maybe wanted to about the juvenile justice system and those policies. But a lot of these issues do take that kind of long-term view and that patience to dive deep. And so I think that, you know, at a minimum, folks need to know where they can go to get reliable information on when to take action.
Yeah.
And we try to provide that through our networks, and other organizations do too. So find organizations that you trust or other advocates and get connected. But then beyond that, I think policy, it's kind of like I was recently thinking, it's kind of like the code, it's like democracy's coding language, right? Like the operating system for democracy. And so, you know, if you're gonna learn how to code, it's gonna take some diving into the weeds. And we need folks who have that time and interest. And I think that we need to do a better job of connecting people to kind of coming along with us for that deeper knowledge, so that there's more people who know, like, oh yeah, I know the legislator who's been working on that, and I know that this is like a three-year kind of time window that we're working at. I'm not expecting change to happen overnight, but I am aware that we need to be building a movement for the next, you know, 2, 3, 5 years so that these policies can either be protected or be advanced or be introduced and passed.
Absolutely. And it is, as you stated, such an ongoing struggle, really, in terms of continuing to do this really good work. And again, I have the utmost respect for the work that you do and your organization, Children First Communities and Schools, and really the platform of that connecting of dots that you all provide. And for the listeners out there whose interest may be piqued in what they've heard, how can they read and hear and learn more about some of these policy and advocacy issues that you are really tackling on the front line? And maybe, again, as we talked about, how to get more involved and how to be able to kind of get to some of these issues before it's at the point of the decision making. The red button is is happening.
Push this now, right? So I think if you're on social media, one of the best ways that we try to kind of keep articles and action alerts and kind of an ongoing kind of dialogue and learning mm-hmm. is our Facebook page, which is at facebook.com/successequation. Mm-hmm. So check that out. Also, our webpage, successequation.org, we try to do postings, and you can sign up there for our email list if you want to get our action alerts. So that would be a great way if you're not on the internet or social media, but want to learn more. I'll print stuff out and send it to you if you want to give us a call at 828-259-9717.
And Greg, as always, thank you so much for joining us here at the Asheville FM NewsHour and sharing us all of your expertise and insights on all things public policy. And one more time for the folks, how can they learn more about the work that you do?
Check out successequation.org or facebook.com/successequation. And Gary, thanks for all you do in our community. And it's always a pleasure to talk to you.